This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you. I have a little offer for everybody, which is you can put pens and so on down. You don't have to take any notes. There are PowerPoints, but if you look on the back of your conference brochure, you'll find out how to get hold of them all. So you don't have to write down. At the speed I need to go at, you won't be able to anyway. Thanks for sticking with us so far. I stand before you a little bit as a fraud. I'm not really speaking with new ideas and responses to government. What I'm standing doing is being a mouthpiece, really, for the views and the concerns and the issues that children and young people have raised with us. And I want to do that... there's a commercial slide first. From my statutory perspective, we're currently based in Ofsted, I and my team, but we have personal statutory functions, as many of you will know, which are not the same as Ofsted's. That's coded for don't ask me any questions about Ofsted. When I'm speaking, that the red terminology there is just to identify the remit of children that we statutorily consult and take views from. So some of the messages are specific to the care sector or the residential education sector, but many have a very strong resonance across all groups of children everywhere. And we just have those three functions: to ask children's views, to advise on rights and welfare, and I love this one, to raise anything I think significant. And the word raise isn't statutorily defined, so we deal with that in all sorts of ways. A bit like James Bond, as some of you have heard me say before, he had an OO code, which meant he could shoot people if he thought it appropriate. We do produce children and young people's guides. One thing that some colleagues and I were discussing a little earlier today in response to this conference is we are planning to produce a young people's guide with the DfE, although they're still thinking about it now, to working together. Having seen the size of it, I was interested with an earlier comment that maybe working together is going to be replaced. So we perhaps wait and see what happens with that before we produce a guide for a guide on it, as you can see, for 10-year-olds and ministers we write for. I did say that to the last group of ministers. I got some funny looks, but then they saw the point. I just want to start with what children have told us about rights, and I just want to underline these are rights which either exist in the Human Rights Act or in the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, or have been proposed specifically by children and young people themselves. For example, number 8, the right not to be bullied, is a specific one which doesn't appear in either of those two source documents, but which is a right that children have proposed for themselves. And for this conference, you just need to see the context, but also very clearly what children within my remit have voted as the top right. That was just under 2,000 of them voting on this, and the top right was to be protected from abuse. And you see lower down there are some other safeguarding relevant ones, to be kept alive and well, about discrimination, about punishment, about bullying, as we've said. Rights always come in the context of responsibilities, and children don't hold back from identifying responsibilities either. These are the top 10 responsibilities those same children came up with. And you'll see again, there's a safeguarding theme there. Responsibility, taking responsibility for your own behaviour and actions. Showing respect to others, responsibility for your own safety. Looking after others, looking after yourself, responsibility for your own health and hygiene. Children are both regarding safety, as, particularly from abuse, as a right, but also accepting that they have a responsibility towards their own safety. Just a few others, I'm not going to read all those out, there isn't time, but just a few others which I thought on the list of 36 that we ended up with being voted on in total, some others that have a particular resonance for today's conference. Drugs, of course, this comes back to this, we talk about child protection, we're talking about safeguarding, and in different contexts those terms could almost become interchangeable, not only politically. Issues about security, work, caring away from parents if it's in best interests, etc., right down to be treated well and fairly if I have broken the law. That heading may sound slightly presumptuous, top messages of the decade, but I realise that I am actually 3 months off, having spent 10 years doing this job. I've actually been doing this job longer than the Prime Minister's been an MP, I realise. Not quite. You mustn't draw any. Don't draw any conclusions from that, please. But over those 10 years, or nearly 10 years, which really underlines these aren't past messages, these are the messages which have really held over those 10 years. They are currently the messages that we are feeding in to the new coalition government as the key common themes of messages from children and young people within my remit over those years, over that decade. So the first one, and there's a lot in there, as I say, you can get hold of these and it tells you how electronically on the back of the brochure, but treating children as individuals, making decisions, what is the best for an individual child, not necessarily a general best, a theme I'll come back to. Taking children's wishes and feelings into account. By the way, in this country, taking feelings into account is a statutory requirement under the Children Act of 1989. That's stronger than the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, which doesn't mention feelings. And, you know, also that very last phrase, children got quite angry when we started consulting them about targets. Please don't make the decision about me be influenced by where you are in relation to your targets. Okay, you know, you can ask about whether you seem to be making the same decision all the time, but at each time a decision is made, make the right decision for me, taking those things into account. Don't think it's about time we had a few, a few children adopted or whatever. An example that came directly from children themselves. Second of these top messages, for those who have a social worker, please visit regularly and often, be accessible, see the child alone. Now, interestingly, children's views have influenced the recently published regulations on the issue of social work visiting. They are much stronger about seeing children alone, out of sight or hearing of carers particularly. And also, children came out with a view that the appropriate frequency of social worker contact for a child in care, consistent with this, it should be about a month. Now, that is far more frequent than currently, but it did lead to an improvement, an increase in frequency in the regulations from the very first consultative draft. And also, children want their social workers to fight for them, to fight for the child client, and to basically to be good at pulling the levers for resources or whatever, as well as being there continually rather than changing. Very familiar, and I'm not claiming novelty for these issues, but really underlining the sorts of issues that really matter to children. Third message, somebody powerful and independent to whom they can appeal for help if things are going badly wrong for them. Maybe to do with abuse, maybe to do with worries about risk to themselves, maybe to do with their rights, their general welfare. One of the moves recently and increasingly at the moment is increasing the power and role of the IRO. Whether that will fulfil that particular function, well, the jury's out, but there's certainly an intention there. But children wanting that sort of ability to go around the immediate system or the immediate decision or the immediate establishment, wherever they are, and be able to, you know, appeal to somebody to say, sometimes, have I got this wrong, or is this wrong, or am I just making a fuss about nothing, before they get to the kind of I'm making a formal complaint stage. And obviously there's all sorts of different initiatives there. There's issues about advocacy to help children do that. Some local authorities in their pledges to children in care have actually given the names and contact details of a senior counsellor or a senior very senior official of the authority to whom children can appeal if they feel that what the pledge is saying isn't being applied to them. Another one, prejudice. No apologies for gearing this one particularly towards children in care. Children in care do tell us they experience prejudice for being in care. One in five tell us that they are bullied because they're in care. That is the difference which leads to them being bullied. So please, plea from children, boost a positive image of care. Whatever we're doing in terms of our prioritisation, our cuts, etc., make sure that we do try to maintain and develop a positive image of care and trying to avoid stereotyping those from care. And children very often say, please don't do things like holding reviews in schools, unless we're happy with that, that will make us stand out from our peers. I remember very strongly the young lad who said, my teacher stood up in front of me, in front of the class, and said, it's time for your review meeting with your social worker now. Can you go along to the staff room? And that boy said, half the class didn't know I was in care. Just a few more points about prejudice. Issues about trying to avoid generalising. 45% of children telling us that they worry about other people knowing like that boy, that they are in care. And they're worried about being judged, about being treated differently, not always better or worse, sometimes better, but just differently, and concerned about standing out and being different. Children very often very concerned about feeling different, feeling that they're being made to stand out and differentiated from the general group. We've talked about the issue of care, particular concerns amongst older children, young people in care, that their care status or being from care might have a deleterious effect on accommodation and employment. And that's a real worry nowadays. Whether or not, I mean, I don't know whether being in care does have a major deleterious impact on employment. It feels it ought to, but I don't know of research specifically reliably reporting on that. We are trying to do some ourselves in consultation with young people shortly. But with the worries in the current economic climate, particularly if you're a young person, particularly if you're probably underachieving, you haven't got good academic qualifications, that is a major concern. Bullying, well, general 9% of children telling us that they're bullied, often or always, 15% worrying, often or always, about bullying, more worrying than actual incidents. And here, very important message, it's difference, perceived difference, that makes you vulnerable. Children tell us themselves that they might actually join in, or at least observe and watch and encourage bullying, either for excitement or for fear that otherwise they might get bullied themselves. But what makes them likely to help a victim of bullying if they see this happening? Basically, if they've already got a relationship with that young person, they're a friend or they're a member of their family, perhaps a sibling. What helps to stop children being bullied, according to children, and bullying is a major safeguarding issue for children, is if they help to build, one, protective friendship groups, and two, not to stand out as different. Sometimes for us professionals a bit counterintuitive, that, because we quite like to, you know, encourage difference and celebrate diversity. Here's children saying, yeah, you need to bear in mind the norms of the group. We talked about children telling people about abuse or other issues. When we ask who they are likely to tell if they tell anybody, the top of the list, time after time, and you know this anyway, is that they're most likely to tell a friend. They'll tell a friend before a parent, they'll tell a friend before a professional. They'll tell a friend, particularly if they are older young people or if they are in a care setting. That does mean that knowledge of what happens, what needs to happen, to whom you need to go on a child protection issue is something that children themselves need to know about. Back to that issue of a young people's guide to working together. The chair will be pleased to hear I'm now in the second half of my address. I'm trying to avoid the 2-minute warning, you see. I'm going to keep him happy. Children, just in terms of safety, children feel safest in the building where they live, least when out and about in an urban area. But again, 43%, very close to that 45% about bullying, just under half, worrying a little or a lot, they tell us, about their own safety. So just under half of children are telling us that they worry very often about their safety, and they also worry very often about being bullied. What are the top dangers? Well, you can see there, and on the next slide I'll describe how it varies according to age a bit, but alcohol, knives, kidnapping and bullying. Road traffic comes up again and again as the most risky cause of accident. Feeling safe, well, just some figures behind that, 92% feeling safe or very safe in the building where they live, unless you're a care leaver, where you feel significantly less safe there, and then the safety feeling drops a bit. At school or college is 88% feeling safe or very safe, down to 76% in the countryside, 65% out in town. Children from residential special schools feel particularly less safe out in town, and children with disabilities tell us that they feel less safe, significantly so, than others when they're out in town. In terms of accidents, a lot of disagreement over alcohol here. 21% of girls telling us they thought alcohol was a very likely cause of accidents. Only 7% of boys. That, incidentally, isn't related to consumption of alcohol. That's perception of alcohol as a likely cause of accidents for children generally. Great difference between girls and boys there. The percentage of girls who thought accidents as a likely cause of alcohol as a likely cause of accidents has actually gone up, whereas the percentage of boys has stayed exactly the same. These figures are from our annual monitor of children, young people's assessments and perceptions of the state of care. the older you are as a young person, the more likely you're to list alcohol. You're also more likely to list drugs or substance abuse as a likely cause of accident. If you go down the age range, the other direction, quite young children, you find that falling, that kind of physical accident, becomes a very likely cause of accident according to those children. Your eighth top message, sorry, there's only 50 of these, don't worry. your eighth one of these, staff make the biggest difference to children's experience of residential care. That's whether you're living in a school, a boarding school, an FE college, a children's home, a secure unit, wherever you are, that comes up again and again. No surprise. I don't know if anybody in the room is surprised by that, but that means that the quality of staff is the area you can make the biggest impact for a child in a residential setting, according to those children. And that's to do with all the things we've talked about already: recruitment, training, induction, supervision, support, and just having the sort of staff that children feel are firm and fair, they can trust and work with, and who actually want to work with children. I mentioned secure units. We did a report about 18 months ago on children's feelings about secure units, life in secure care. We visited between us about half the secure units in the country. Shortly after we visited, about half of them closed down. I don't think that's relevant. But the young people in the secure units were telling us that they actually felt safe in security and insecure, in both senses of that term, on leaving. They were worried about leaving. I remember one young person saying, when they're going out for sort of trial trips to town and so on, I said rather naively, well, isn't there a temptation to run away? He said, no, it makes us feel even more worried about being out. And, you know, there are people out there who might want to get us. We might want to get into trouble again. And we're back, you know, risking going back where we started. There were only 10, not 50, don't worry, Chair.
But you have 2 minutes.
Yes, I thought I might. I thought I'd get in before. They're quite extensive, these minutes. The same time should be taken to check out possible placements with family or friends as any other foster placement. That was one area where children disagreed with the regulations as they stand at the moment. I just wanted to put this up because it underlines that point about children wanting the right decision for them now. Children, when we ask them a question, you know, is it generally right to do this or right to do that, or should this always happen? That is one of the most common, well, it depends. It depends on my views, my wishes, my feelings, my situation. You can't come up with common answers for everybody. I might be in the minority where it's better to do something which isn't right for the majority. So please be individual about it. And that goes for making placement changes. We're very near the end of my 2 minutes, and I'm going to stop on the 2 minutes, I promise you. Well, I won't know because I've said that. The most frequent casework issue that we pick up is about change of placement. Children saying that they're being told they've got to change placement because there's been a change of policy, the money's run out, or the placement was only for 2 years and, you know, you weren't really supposed to be settling there as you have. Children are saying very clearly to us, please, once you've placed us away, let us stay until it's in our best interest, taking our wishes and feelings into account, so that an out-of-authority placement is a needs-long commitment. But it does depend. One young person said, I know it's bad for your rules and statistics, but sometimes it's good to move placement. 70% this year said that their last change of placement was in their best interest. And 54%, even more telling, said their last change of school because of a change of placement was, in their view, in their best interests. Over half saying that they changed school when they changed school because of a change of placement thought that was in their best interests. Penultimate slide, just a few points about knowing about complaints processes. I referred to them earlier. Just under 3/4 of children within my remit knew how to make a complaint, and nearly 2/3 thought that last time they'd had done that, of those who had, obviously, they thought it was sorted out okay. Just over half knew how to get an advocate, although 29% didn't know what an advocate is. My best answer to that was, isn't it a liqueur, which wasn't at all the right answer. That's a joke, you can laugh. 48%, mentioned independent reviewing officers earlier, knew how to get in touch with theirs, but nearly 1/4, and we're keeping an eye on that figure, even these days didn't know what an IRO is. My final slide, as the Chair will be very pleased to know, just the importance of being proportional about things. We've talked about risk, we've talked about risk aversion. That percentage figure, 42%, is the proportion of children and young people who are telling us still consistently that they are not allowed to stay with friends overnight unless their friends' parents have been police checked. There is no such policy or rule that friends' parents have to be police checked. The rule is, in terms of regulations and guidance from successive governments, actually, that the decision is to be made by the carer using the same sorts of risk criteria that you make for your own children. It isn't whether the young person's parents have been police checked or not. But that keeps cropping up. I don't know how we kill that one, but you can't talk with a group of children, young people, for more than about a quarter of an hour in care on open issues before that one will crop up. So we do need to be proportional about care. I've given myself more of a two-minute warning, so I shall now stop, Chair.
Thank you very much, Roger.